We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Greetings one and all. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, things are opening up again, we're going back out. I've been in a pub garden, the Star of the East in Limehouse. Ah, what a place, what a place. If you do find yourself in the Limehouse area, do go along. It is a sensational pub, let me tell you, some wonderful things. Speaking of wonderful things, we've got a comedy show coming your way. We've decided that let's do it. So we're doing Rich Wilson live at Dark Horse from a secret location. It's the Forum in Tunbridge Wells, but don't say that because it's shut. But we're outside of that very venue. There'll be about 25 people in the live audience, but you can buy tickets for the Facebook Live event that we're gonna stream it via Facebook. Facebook Live. How about that? And early bird people can buy a ticket for $3.99. So do that, because they are limited. Those tickets are limited. So jump up and do that. May 13th is the day for that gig. We've got Jen Brister headlining. We've got Clinton Baptiste, the medium from Phoenix Nights, aka Alex Lowe, top man. Amy Cooper, and plus someone else possibly. They haven't confirmed yet. Still waiting to hear. But it'll be emceed by yours truly, one of the finest MCs in the land, I think you'll find. And just so you know, this is not a gig where just comedians are just staring down the barrel of their laptops. This is an actual physical gig, proper stand-up comedy, under the fairy lights and the trees and the leaves and the wonderful night sky. It's going to be beautiful. You need to get your tickets. This is a proper gig, done properly, and get this, it's all totally interactive with your comments. You can join us in the chat. Producer Paul will be sat off stage, or to the side of the stage, anyway. We're not quite sure where he's going to be, but he's going to be amongst it, and he is going to keep an eye on the chat. I'll be referring to him every now and again. What's going on in the chat, Paul? And he's going to let me know. So you're involved in the gig. You can heckle. How about that? Get on that. And so that's 13th of May. That's a Thursday at 7:30. Get your tickets. Early bird tickets now. They're $3.99. Do that and you won't be disappointed. Links for everything I've been pushing on you are in my bio. Just click on that. It's a link tree. It will take you to wherever you need to be. Everything will be listed. And check the episode details for this podcast. Also, before we get into this week's episode, I just want to say a big thank you to our brand new Patreon, Steve Sargent. Oh yes, welcome aboard the good ship Insane in the Membrane, Steve Sargent. Lovely to have you on board. Thank you for your support. Thank you to all of our patrons for your lovely support. Welcome aboard, Steve Sargent. So that's done with all the selling and the pushing. There's so many things to push. I'm sorry to bring it to you. There's also my Soho Theatre show. That's on the 20th and 21st of May. Tickets available now. Buy those tickets. I've got two nights to sell the bloody tickets. 60 tickets on each. Grab them. Bloody grab them. Let's stop selling stuff and get on to the fact that we're here for one reason and one reason only. That's to talk about mental health with our wonderful guest. We got there. This is what happens. Like, you just... Everyone, you got to plug all these things, get people involved, and then you can do wonderful things like this podcast. And I'm not complaining now. I'm not complaining. It's nice to be busy, isn't it? It's lovely to be busy. No one's complaining. Come on. This week's guest, talking about being busy, Dave Fulton. He's lived a life. Not only is he a stand-up comedian, but he's also a world-class trombonist. And that's not a euphemism. He's a brilliant. And the thing is with Dave, when you meet him, you see his comedy, you hear his comedy, he's quite sort of masculine. Now, you talk about, you know, he builds motorbikes and he goes and he climbs frozen ice fountains, and he does all these, he's out and about and all these manly sort of escapades. But he plays the trombone beautifully, and he's a really beautiful man. He's a sensitive soul. We've spent a lot of time together. I adore his company. We chat on the phone, and we it's just great. He's just a great dude, and so it's great to have him on to talk about his life, growing up in Idaho in America, and then coming over here, and then talking about, and then they've adopted a son. And I got to see his son as well, because we were doing it via Zoom, so his son kept coming in the room, and he goes, "Oh man, beautiful, beautiful," and it's a beautiful thing. And he loves being a dad, and he's been telling us what he's been doing during the lockdown and things like that. And it's really nice to really have a proper chat with him. And he told us, there's some great stories as well, a couple of times when his near-death experiences that I didn't see coming. We were kind of like talking about other stuff, and then like towards the end, you're like, "Oh, this happened." You're like, "What? Why didn't you open with that? Why didn't you open with that? You're an experienced stand-up comedian. You should be opening with that." Yeah, but it was great stories. You're going to really enjoy this chat. So listen, we've wasted enough of your time with all the adverts and this and that and the other. Do you know what? Coming up in a bit, it's Dave Fulton.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Well, my son's going to roll in here after 3 and ruin everything, but the wife will keep him busy.
That's all right, man. This is the beauty of doing these things from our houses, you know? Yeah, life happens.
Yeah, no shit. Are you actually in the studio, Rich?
Yeah. I'm in the sound booth. So he's out there, I'm in here. So we're out the way of each other. It's all socially distant and all that.
Yeah, I'm fucking tired of it.
Really
done.
Fucking,
I'm just bored. Yeah. How much time have you spent on your own? Yeah. So.
Yes.
Wearing shoes with like little fucking fingers for your toes.
it's that shit. And by the way, there's no introduction to this, so we can edit out anything we say.
Thanks,
Paul. This is us getting into it. I watched that documentary about the Cecil Hotel, about the girl that got found in the water tank.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching that. You know, I lived in L.A. from 91 to 95, and I knew a little bit about this. I knew the Cecil existed. I knew it's not the place you want to go unless you want to rent a room by, you know, the hour.
Fortunately,
I've never lasted an hour. So I think I would probably get a discount.
Yeah. You just kind of go up in the lift once, as far as I get.
Well, it was a joke I did years ago, going, my wife goes, "Yeah, you have to put this conditioner in your hair and leave it in there for 3 minutes. Can you find something to do in the shower for 3 minutes?" I'm like, "Can I?" She's like, "Okay, then what do you do for the other two?" I'm going to bring that one back.
Yeah, it's a good one, man. Yep. Mind you, you're getting older now, so it'll probably take you a bit longer to crank it up.
You know what's weird? I've been riding. I ride my bicycle almost every day for exercise and keep the cardio up. It's funny because when you go to the doctor and they go, well, I've got something to this and that, and they always ask you the three questions: Are you? Is there blood in your poo? Are you losing weight? Are you tired? And I'm like, I have an 8-year-old son. I'm always tired. There's no blood in my poo. I don't even like, pickled beets. And then, I'm fine. I'm not losing weight, So, it's as a matter of fact, I gained, I was keeping my weight pretty much in check, during the lockdown stuff. And then at the beginning of this year, I discovered, Welsh cakes.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of breaking up that monotony with clotted cream scones.
Fuck. Yeah, just pushing cement into your arteries.
Well, it's just kind of, oh, my God, what are we going to do with this extra kilo? Oh, here we go. Let's put it on your ass. There we go. There we go. Right on your middle section. Oh, look, your pants don't fit. Oh, yeah, that's why.
Yeah. But it's true, though, isn't it? It's like... I mean, I'm not one. I used to love going to the gym, but I don't really love running around in the streets and jogging and things like that. But you have to do something. It's like a car, isn't it? If you just leave your car just sat, not moving, it starts to break down. It starts to just fall apart. And that's what you have to do. If you just have to keep the friction that keeps you together. You have to keep that going in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, eat the vegetables, for some reason I'm really on an apple kick. I love eating like a couple of apples every day.
Yeah, right.
Nice. I don't know why. And,
it's just easy, isn't it? Just done.
Yeah, and then I throw the cores at squirrels. Just fucking bam. just to get it out of my system.
Yeah.
And they're gray squirrels, so they're American squirrels, so I feel even better,
So it's fine.
Yeah, I can't do anything about gun control, but I can huck apple cores at American gray squirrels while I'm in England.
Because you grew up in Idaho, didn't you?
North Idaho. Yeah.
So what was that?
Yeah.
Like?
Right now, Idaho has more moving vans going to it than any other state in the union.
Really?
Everybody's moving there. White people from California and Texas and Western Washington. Trying to escape the liberal horde, as they say, and they're moving into my hometown, where 5 years ago you could buy a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house in downtown that was built for the workers in the 20s for, maybe 70 grand, 80 grand.
Yeah, right.
And now they're going for 600.
Fuck.
Yeah. Fuck. And I just found out from my real estate buddy that people are selling, their houses in California for a couple million bucks. And then there's no houses in my neck of the woods, but they don't care. They're just moving up and they're staying in a hotel until, something comes on the market.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw Kyle Kinane. He's one of my favorite comics and he's just moved out of LA. He's gone, I think he's in Portland, Oregon, maybe.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. Portland's interesting. Portland has got... It's got everything. Portland. I had some friends of mine live in Portland, and they said it used to be really cool liberal. It was kind of, if you wanted to be cool, you lived in Seattle. If you're done being cool, you moved to Portland.
Yeah, right.
And,
when you get older, yeah.
Yeah, and Portland used to have this really cool place called the First Church of Elvis Presley, and you could get married there, and it was kind of fun. But money came into the area, and people who have money don't like people with purple hair. And so they started controlling that narrative. And then there's something called, years ago, it's called the Oregon Citizens Alliance, OCA. And they were going to these little towns in Oregon and passing these local kind of laws that's made it illegal for gay people to hold office.
Wow.
And it was totally unconstitutional. But the laws, these little laws got passed because there was no gay people in these little towns. And in the end, the little family that started the OCA, they embezzled millions, and I think some are in jail now or something like that. But so, I mean, that's the thing. I'm like, Idaho's got a lot of crazy fucking people. I mean, Seriously, the only reason they're in Idaho is because Florida was too long a drive.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, it was, I mean, in Idaho, you could legally marry a woman at 14.
Fuck.
If you have her parents' consent or the consent of a judge, and they passed that law and they kept that law in the books. It came up for, you know, they're looking at it again in 2019. And it stayed on the books. And one of the reasons it stayed on the books is they felt if you could get married at 14, that would be their way of maybe stemming teenage pregnancy. And wow. Yeah. Also, Idaho leads the nation in wrongful deaths of juveniles due to, neglect because of religious beliefs.
Shit,
at last count, there was over 150 children that died as a result of their parents' religious beliefs, and their parents weren't brought up on charges. It was like a misdemeanor. It was just down to religious beliefs. And they tried to pass a law to make that involuntary manslaughter.
Yeah.
And that law failed. That didn't get passed.
Wow, man.
So yeah, Idaho's weird. Also, I mean, there's open carry. You can walk around carrying a gun. You can do that in a lot of states. But you're growing up, we never did that. We never carried guns. We thought it was silly. But all the people moved in have carried guns. And
I saw someone the other day. They put up a picture of there was someone in a queue at Starbucks or a coffee shop where he was, and he's got this massive rifle strapped to his back.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were saying they were going like, right, I have to decide if this guy in front of me is just carrying that, you know, because it's the law, you know, he can carry, it's open carry. Or if he's going to go fucking nuts if he doesn't get the right coffee. I have to decide that. I have to. And it's cool, man.
Yeah, that whole thing, like, I have the right to bear arms. Well, I have the right not to be shot.
Yeah, by you. And terrified when you're walking around in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, when I was home, last time I was home was October 2019, and there was a guy at Lowe's Hardware, which is like a B&Q. And I looked over, and he had a Glock 17, looked like a Glock 17, strapped to him. And I did the double take like that. And he saw me looking, and I just looked and looked again and then looked away, and he goes, problem? I'm like, no, man, if you like Glocks, it's all you.
Fuck me.
And he goes, hey, most reliable handgun out there. Well, if you say so, I can't argue with somebody who's got a gun. And he kind of laughed, you know, and I said, just not my call. And he goes, oh, yeah, what would you carry? And I'm like, none of your business.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's that attitude. It's that straight away they're on the defensive.
And you know
it's fucking stupid to carry that around.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just you. It's just you with your fucking gun porn wanting to, you know.
Well, it's funny. All the people I grew up with, they don't do that. And I went into the local sporting goods store. It's called Black Sheep. And they're great. I mean, Black Sheep is great. They have everything. They have workwear. They have boots. They have fishing gear. They have camping gear. You know, they have guns. They have a lot of guns. Everything, yeah. Everything. But you know, the guys there are not nuts. You know, they may walk around with the guns because they work around the gun case. But I don't care. You know. And there's a guy there. He's probably at 70 now, and he's the Yoda of guns. He's forgotten more things than they printed about guns. And he's a cool guy, right? And matter of fact, I went in there looking for something, and I was like, well, yeah, I'm an Idaho boy, but I live in London now. He's like, London? What do you want to live in London for? I'm like, well, I'm there for work. I'm married to Gal. I said, I still have property here. You know, so I still consider myself an Idaho boy. He goes, oh, Idaho, yeah, you better watch some terrorists in London. You know, it was after London Bridge, that went down. And I said, think about this, mate. You know, London's a really big city. And those guys jumped the curb. To the time they were dead on the pavement was 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And in London. I said, do you really think Coeur d'Alene, Idaho's finest could get from one end of this town to the other in under 11 minutes and execute people like that? And he kind of went, no. So, you know.
Yeah.
But I was in there. It was funny. There was a guy in there, and he was at the counter. And he said, what gun would protect me? What's the best gun I can have to protect myself from a bear, a handgun, in the woods? You know, because people are like, I'm going in the woods. Well, there's been bear sightings. And there's always been bear sightings and stuff. You just take pepper spray.
That's where they live.
Yeah. You know, you just walk in there and go, well, I don't remember inviting you. You know, so, and it was great. The guy looked down at all the guns, and he looked at the guy, and he went, none of them. None of these will kill the bear. I mean, they'll die eventually, but you'll just piss him off, and he'll eat you.
Yeah. You'll die first before anything happens. Yeah.
That's what he told the guy. And the thing is, it wasn't like... you know, he could obviously make the sale right there, but he went, no, no, you know. And the guy goes, well, come protect me. He goes, well, you know, we have some of these, you know, and he's pointed to, you know, 30-odds hunting rifles that'll drop a bear. Well, I don't carry that backpack. And well, get some pepper spray. It's over there, you know. Because yeah, that's I think that's America, or maybe society in general, is we're just looking for that silver bullet, that magic button, you know, that just give me the vaccine, and then the world will be set right tomorrow, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, let me take the pill, and I can keep smoking and drinking. You know, yeah. I don't have to change my lifestyle. I want you to fix it.
That's it. You know? No responsibility.
That's my big problem right now. I think in the last year or so is the world in general, and definitely America, has no accountability and has no mercy.
Yeah.
So when you do go, wow, I fucked up. I shouldn't have done that. The world turns around and goes, yeah, I was right. You were wrong. No, the world should say, that's all right, man. We all make mistakes. You know, let's learn and move on. So, yeah, I think it's a big issue. And and I don't see any way for it to resolve itself. I don't know. I don't know what to say to that.
It seems to be getting that, like you've just said, seems to be getting worse. It's more, people are almost excited to go, yeah, you fucked up. That means you're taking the light away from me. You know, because I'm perfect. It's you. You're the fucking idiot. You fucked up. Let's fucking burn him. You know.
Yeah. You know, it's like a great way to poke the bear is just bring up Brexit. You know.
Yeah.
You know, those fucking Brexiteers, guns and races. And I go, well, I know some people have voted out, and their reason was like, well, okay, you know, and then three of them are black.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. I mean, they're all business owners, and they're running into problems trying to conform to the EU, and. You know, I mean, you look at what's happened in this country regarding, you know, something as simple as Sheffield Steel. I mean, I've got a garage with, you know, I build all kinds of stuff in there. I got wrenches back there made in Sheffield. And if I went back up to the factory, you know, if I found the building where it was actually made, there'd be no wrenches being pumped out. It'd be at best maybe a cafe to get me a gluten-free bagel and some avocado slices. So, And so it's not, you know, it's not governments, it's just businesses on that end of that. And the EU is a fantastic idea. Oh my God, what a great idea. Bring all these countries together. And you're okay, cool, great, let's get them together. And then you start adding on to that pile and adding on to that pile. And you get to the point and you're like, you almost had a table going, I'm sorry, who are you? Who are you again? Yeah. Why are you here? Oh, because I can make vacuum cleaners in your country for like 10 bucks as opposed to 15 bucks here. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Cameron fucked you over. I think, you know, France has never been a fan of you. It's been a long time coming. There's a really great book I read called How to Lose a Referendum. It might be on my desk somewhere. That kind of, written by two guys who voted to remain. And it was just really laid it out how things were going downhill for a while. And, you know, and people that voted in 1975 voted out now because they didn't feel like they got the deal they wanted. And, So I don't know. There's no, you know, if they want to get back in, that's great, you know. But if you're burning up a lot of energy just blaming Brexiteers for everything, I envy you. I envy you that you have the time to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the rest of us are just hanging on by our fingertips.
Yeah,
trying
man.
To survive, man.
I'm just trying to feed my family. I'm trying to get some writing done. You know. So I don't want to be lectured to. Please, you know, please stop. And please don't bring that whole fucking, I mean, I was trying to explain the class system over here to my American friends, you know, because we have privilege in America. We have white privilege, obviously, because the whole country's based on certain levels of racism and that we have a real problem with. We're denial or ignorance or just ignoring it. And over here, you have your issues as well, without a doubt. I mean, you just paid off all the slave owners in 2015.
Which is crazy to me. I can't believe that was a thing.
I know. Like, you know, somebody in accounting went, okay, well, got that done.
Well done, guys.
All right, well done. You guys got your money? All right.
All righty. Another job jobbed.
Yeah. Meanwhile, every black person here is going, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
What? You know? So... And you know what's crazy is there's a really great book about Lincoln during the beginning of the Civil War. It's called The Fire Beneath or something like that. It was written by a Lincoln historian. And the slave owners in America in, you know, late 1850s, when they're going, hey, man, you got to get rid of your slaves. They're like, okay, well, you got, you know, if you, this is a huge financial investment, which I, you know, understand. I mean, each back then, an adult male was worth about as much as a sport, you know, a sport utility vehicle, you know, like 35, 50 grand.
Wow.
So to them. And yeah. So, like, if you reimburse us for our investment, we'll talk about setting all these people free, like they did in England, like, you know, give us some money like they did in England. And and Lincoln said, no, we can't do that because it'll bankrupt the Republic. We will, the government will be no more. We have no more operating funds and we won't. And I refuse to take out a bond like they do in England. So that was the end of that. And wow. And I also love the fact that people argue that the Civil War in America wasn't about slavery. It was about economics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, and you go, yeah. No, it was about slavery. And if you want to change the narrative to make it sound like it was about economics because they were essentially working for free and the North didn't like that, that's, you can call that economics, but it's still fucking slavery. Yeah. And also the, there was a big problem because in the U.S. is the U.S. government can't dictate policy to individual states. So the states are trying to bring that up, going, you know, you can't tell us what to do kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And another big deciding factor was the southern states wanted to make it legal to own slaves in the new Western territories. And the current government was not going to allow that. So one thing led to another and boom, boom.
Fuck. You know?
So, yeah, that was 1860 and it went on for a whole bunch of years. And then, of course, they freed everybody, and it,
yeah,
it kind of, you know, they never got the 40 acres and a mule, you know, and then the black community decided, well, we'll just form our own little communities and stuff, and you know, form our own little lending systems, and of course, white people were amazed that black people could be so fucking smart. And they did. They set up, I mean, they had the Black Wall Street and all that. And of course, that pissed off a bunch of white folks. So we had the massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And nobody's ever charged with that. Wow. You know, we had Jim Crow days. We had, it went on and on and on. And the, yeah. And I love the fact that anytime friends of mine in the States bring up, oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but that was in, this is now. That was in, this is now. You got to let that go. Let that go. Which always makes me laugh now because the fact that we have to call it Potato Head and not Mr. Potato Head. Like, why are you ruining my toys? I'm like, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine if you heard a story that your great-great-great-great-grandfather was butt-fucked because he couldn't stay in line with the rest of the slaves and they, you know, and they hung your mom, you know, as a result of it? I mean, come on, you know? So, but I told a friend of mine, I said, wouldn't it have been amazing if after World War II, the almost million black GIs went back to America, if they were given the GI Bill. The GI Bill was the ability for them to go to college. They were denied that. They defended, you know, the free world, and they came back, and they still had to get them back on the bus. But wouldn't it be cool? All right, sure, you're not going to let them vote. Sure, you're going to make them ride the back of the bus. But just give them an education. Give them a free education for their contribution to World War II. And that held over into the Korean War in the 50s, you know? Just give them the GI Bill. And I said, and the reason I say that is my dad was a Korean War veteran and he got the GI Bill and he got a degree in mechanical engineering and he went on, got a great job, provided for his family, bought real estate. You know, it's where I am now because of that. And I think if you just would have given that just to the veterans from World War II and the Korean War, imagine how much further America would have been economically.
Oh, man.
We could not let go. We could not let go of our prejudices and our hatred toward other races.
Oh, so man. It's like the same here. I had this very conversation a few weeks ago and they were talking about, they were saying, oh, there's every program on the TV now is black people. Every advert is black people. We're getting it shoved down our throats. Black people this, black people that. Oh, it's getting silly. And I'm like, this has to happen. This has to happen. There has to be this change, and you just don't like it because you're not used to it. But imagine growing up when all the movies are all full of white people. Was one black person in it, all the TV shows, one black person in it. The fact that the system, when they say systemic racism, they talk about the fact that, like you said, the 40 acres and a mule never happened, even though, so these people were freed, but they weren't, they were just cut loose and just left. Just like, off you go, you're free. You go, yeah, we haven't got any, what can we do? Yeah, you'll be fine, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, and before you go, leave that shovel, the shovel's mine.
Yeah, it's got my name on it. Hey, fucking leave that shit.
Yeah, but
like, and I was saying, like, over here, like, you don't get black families standing outside of stately homes that were owned by their ancestors. Like, it's all white people all the way down the line, and that's why it's all fucked, and that's why this change has to happen now. And they couldn't understand it. They couldn't get it.
No.
It's, no. You know, Norm Macdonald was on a chat show, and he said, he said, black people have no money, they're poor. And people up in arms, and people rang in and go, ah, you're racist, you're this, you're that. And he's like, prove me wrong then. Prove me wrong. And they couldn't. I mean, he might have worded it better, but Norm, isn't it? That's fucking Norm.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, you know, people make jokes about black people can't swim. Reason they can't swim is because white people wouldn't let them at the pools in America.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, and, you know, I have people I grew up with back home and they go, what the fuck is this white privilege, man? I'm like 60 years old. I don't feel like I'm privileged. And you just go, look, when three of your friends are hanging out on a street corner in sweatshirts with the hoods up, do the cops pull up and shoot you? When you get pulled over by the police and the police goes, you have any weapons in the car? And you go, yeah, I have a gun right here. You know, what it invariably, you know, kind of melts down to is you and him talking about where they get the best deal on bullets, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You walk into a bank, they don't, you know, they think, oh, this is a guy here for a loan. Not, oh, is he going to rob us? I mean, and it's all, I mean, look at this, you know, the crack epidemic in America. All you ever saw on the news was black people smoking crack, black people, black crack babies, black this, black that. Did you know that 2/3 of the people addicted to crack were white? Did we ever hear about that?
No,
man. We had to make it part of the black problem. So my son is black, so I'm trying to raise him with his eyes wide open. Yeah, your parents are white. Yeah, we had some benefits because of that. And so we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that you have the same kind of choices, the same kind of, you know, I don't know, the same kind of things available to you that will help your life. And give him a leg up as best we can. And yeah, we're going to run into racism without a doubt. And it'll be fun to, you know, when they watch his white dad walk in. Now, on the other side of that, you know, because he's around two white people, I don't want him to be afraid of black people either.
No.
So we've been, you know, we try to mix it up as much as possible. And I mean, it's all we can do. I mean, it's, you can't protect your children from everything. You have to just give them the tools to be able to try to deal with it. Yeah. So, and that's why he's going to learn everything I know about shooting guns.
Do you know what, though? This is what I like about you, is that on the surface, you're very, but we've talked about this before, where you're very, you're guns, and I build bikes, and I climb
frozen waterfalls,
and you know, and I do all these manly things, and I'm a fucking dude. But then, because I know you and have gotten to know you over the years, there's this other side that people don't realise that there's more to you than fucking manly pursuits. You know, like you're a like the trombone. Just when I found that out, it fucking blew my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you still practice? Do you practice every day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can, you know.
Go on. Hang
on. So, yeah. Oh, I can still.
Yeah,
I can still,
man.
Buzz it. By the way, shooting guns.
Oh, hang on. It's gone. Hang on.
I think that trombone.
Blown it out.
I don't know. Dave's still connected. Oh, there he is. He's back.
Hey, man. Sorry, you disappeared for a minute.
Oh, there I am.
The trombone playing, it froze. Sounded great, but it froze the picture. And then you went. I think Zoom has never had a trombone at that level blast.
Yeah. What the fuck is this? This is what brought on the towers.
Shut down. You're talking about shooting guns.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I own guns. I grew up with guns. I don't. It's not a big deal for me. And then, I mean, it is for here because you guys don't have any. And where I grew up, everybody had them. We didn't show them off. We didn't carry them. We went hunting, you know. But most of my friends hunted for subsistence. And then, you know, I know how to work on cars and motorcycles. I climb frozen waterfalls. But women do that too. Yeah. You know, and probably a lot better than me, you know. So,
especially with your fat ass now.
Yeah. So, I'm into all that. The And it's not, I'm not trying to prove anything. Everybody I grew up with was into that kind of stuff. So, you know, I had good company. We were competitive, you know, when it came to climbing and things like that. I used to shoot competitively, you know, but yeah, I mean, my dad being a mechanical engineer, taught me, I mean, I wish I would have learned more. I didn't pay attention as much as I should have. And climbing frozen waterfalls is just, you know, something, I don't know, I just got into, you know, camping, winter camping, all that kind of crap.
And, it's where you grew up, like you said, that's just what you did. It's
It's a product of your environment.
Thing.
So when I am, so when my friends post on Facebook, you know, them climbing and skiing and snowboarding, it just kills me. You know, because where I grew up, skiing was not a middle class thing. You could be dog shit poor and still go skiing.
Yeah, right.
There's five ski hills with an hour's drive. It was cheap back then. You could go to a charity shop and buy boots and poles and skis for like $50, you know?
Wow.
And I had friends of mine do that, and they wear motorcycle helmets on the ski hill and just and wear jeans, you know, wear the worst possible gear. And yeah, and then drive drunk home. I mean, it was a time in our lives that it was great. It happened. We're lucky to be alive. It will never be like that ever again.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I was part of, lucky enough to be part of the kind of the Western comedy scene in America, because I started in the 80s. And it was, some of us have been kind of recounting that and how we now realize that we're older and we see what comedy's evolved into. And there's a whole crop of comedians who've never known life without stand-up comedy in their world. And people go, "You're doing what? What? What is that? Yeah. What?" You know, and all you had was, you know, you had Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, later Jay Leno, and then you had the Late Night with David Letterman. That was it.
Yeah.
There was, you know, I remember the 90s, they had the MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour, which I did, and they had Evening at the Improv, but there was no panel shows. There was none of that. All the sitcoms went to actors, proper actors. And then they started handing that shit out to the comics, and a lot of them made money, and most of them, nothing came of it. So yeah, there was no, we were just like, "Oh my God, we are getting paid to do this. How fucking cool is this?" And we thought we were going to live forever, man. You know, we would drive hours. I mean, cause out west, I mean, God, you would drive from my house in Idaho down to San Francisco, 14 and a half hours. I'd do that in one push.
Fuck, man.
You know, it was 18 and a half hours to L.A. Just do it one push. Get up in the morning. Come on, let's go to L.A. So you just drive to L.A. Yeah, just go.
See, that's the difference when we talk about, like, when American comics or Canadian comics talk about the road, I'm a road comic. They what they mean is that 21 hours to a gig, 14 hours to a gig.
Yeah.
Whereas here, we don't really use that term road, because you're kind of there and back in a day. You kind of go, it's 3 hours there, it's 3 hours back. You know, it's not, you can't really, unless you, even when you stay out, you know, you're in a hotel for the night, still doesn't feel like you're on the road.
Oh man, I used to, I mean, the longest I was on the road without sleeping in my own bed was 9 weeks.
Wow.
And I drove from North Idaho across Montana into the Dakotas, North Dakota, did gigs, drove up into Winnipeg, Canada. Did gigs there, and then drove west through Saskatchewan and Alberta and British Columbia out to Vancouver Island, and then down into Seattle through Portland, San Francisco, LA, and came back up through Nevada. And when you didn't have gigs, I slept in my car, you know? Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, I would love to have done that.
It was, you know, and we were just kind of like, all right, whatever, you know? And it was, everybody did it. It was nuts. It was crazy. And we had... And there were some really, really great comics who didn't have any career goals. They just thought, wow, we're getting paid for this. I remember so many times, which I can do it now, which I would leave the house with a full tank of gas and $10 and be gone for like 8 weeks or 6 weeks. Because I knew the gig that night paid cash and I had a hotel. So I would, you know, I would wash clothes in the bath and fill the tank and keep driving. And, you know, in the 80s, there was drugs and there was women, and it was nuts. It was nuts. And there was no internet. There was no no revenge porn. There was no, you know, nothing to, the worst thing that could possibly happen is you would go home with a girl, wake up, and there'd be another comics 8x10 photo on her wall. And you're like, oh shit. Oh my God. You know that guy? You're like, yeah. You know him? No, I have to go. I have to go now. So.
Different times, man. It's a different time. Oh. Uh-oh. Hey, man.
Say hi. Give a wave.
Hey, how you doing? Good to see you.
He can't hear you.
Oh, yeah, you got your headphones on.
What he's asking about is, you know, I've been doing quotes on the garage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I really like the Harpo Marx one the other day.
Yeah, not people would get that.
Yeah. But the,
yeah, so I've been putting a year ago, a little, yeah, about a, almost exactly a year ago, I put a quote up on the garage. I don't have it here anymore. Anyway, it was a Winston Churchill quote. Just a real simple thing. Because everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, this is the end of the world. It's the new Spanish flu. What's going to happen? Are we going to live? And so I put a quote up on the garage. And I thought it was kind of cool. So then, you know, I put another quote up. And every 3 days ago, I would just change a quote. And my garage door is black, and I put it on chalk. So you wipe it off and redo it. And so I just kept doing it. And then... after a few months of this, I ran out of chalk. And so I put up in the deal, go, I've run out of chalk. Thanks, you know, whatever, you know, and it's been fun. And so I left that up for a couple of days. And then somebody wrote in chalk, we, the people of Kingston, would like an encore.
Wow.
Please. And I was like, oh, that's kind of nice. So I posted that. And then I had the garage door open. I was working on some bikes. And this guy said, did you really run out of chalk? I'm like, well, yeah, you know. And he goes, I'm an essential worker. Like, I could give a shit. But, you know, and I, but the quotes really kind of cheer me up. I look forward to seeing the new one, you know, every couple of days. I went, oh, okay. So he goes away and he comes back with chalk.
Wow.
So, and then another person brought me two more bags of chalk. Then I got some more chalk from some anonymous, somebody hung a carrier bag on the knob and the, on the little door handle off my back gate for more chalk. And I went, all right. So I just kept doing it. And yeah. Through the lockdown. And I didn't try to get political. I didn't write, you know, Black Lives Matter or, you know, all, any of that kind of stuff. Or, you know, hooray for Biden, Trump's a cunt, any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. I just kept it, you know, light. Some people read into it, I was a bit liberal. And I'm like, that's on you, man. That was
Interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's your interpretation of that. So... a year goes by, and this morning, my son goes, Daddy, you know, somebody out the back gate, so open the gate. And what happened is somebody had dropped a jar of cookies and a little potted plant and a note that said, thank you. It was a gal from America. She goes, it's been a really tough year, and one of the things that kind of helps me get through it is your quotes I've been reading on your garage, and I really appreciate that.
Wow, man.
And so I've gotten a lot of that. I've gotten people stop me in the street, go, oh, I like your quotes. And but I did it for the community. I didn't do it necessarily for Facebook or Twitter or try I think I maybe got like 5 new followers, you know. I did it for the community. I did it for the community, and it's really kind of brought people together. So people, because I'm at the door open, I'm walking out the back all day, I recognize, okay, that's the guy who puts the quotes on the garage and stuff. And so, yeah, I am... it's kind of brought our little neighborhood together. It's about 5 roads around here. We all kind of gotten to know each other, and I'm the guy with the quotes on the garage, and I'm all about the community thing. Yeah. I'm all about the community thing. So, you know, yeah, I'm not smart enough to do a podcast, I guess.
Well, I have to get someone to help me. I wouldn't do this on my own. This shit wouldn't come out, that's the thing. This during this last year, I think it's really shone a light on, I've said this before, on how fragile we are, our environment is, us human beings, and we really need now more than ever to come together. And doing little things like that, like putting the quotes on the garage door, doing this podcast, talking to people, it's just doing your bit, just to keep people, just to do a nice thing, keep people, trying to put positivity out there rather than just, oh, it's all fucked, we're all fucked, you know?
Yeah.
Just doing your little bit.
Get another voice in your head rather than the one that's already there. You know, it was, I mean, I've had a couple, probably two and a half dark moments in the last year. And and I never put anything on social media because I don't want anybody to read that shit. And because, you know, thoughts and prayers don't get you through it.
Nah.
And in the end, you start start embracing some of the ideas behind cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're trying to get out of that bubble, you know, that echo chamber. And and then once that starts filtering and you start realizing, okay, you know, I'm not saying, you know, taking your own life is the worst thing, you know, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, you think about it. And it's funny, somebody said the other day, they go, well, geez, Dave, you got suicidal. I bet you just go climbing and figure, fuck it, I'm going climbing. I said, yeah, but the problem with that is I'll be halfway up a route going, okay, how to do this? And like, I'm fucking burning, but I really want to learn how to do this. You know, so if I fell, I'd be pissed off if I fell, not like, yay. I'd be like, fuck, I really want to learn this, you know? And so one of the things I did a Zoom open mic, and you know, I think it's important to keep your mind active and work on material. And
yeah,
and I said, I think one of the things I'm trying to work on is anybody who might have thoughts of suicide or, you know, taking their own life or, you know, getting down, you know, I hope they call me. And if they go, geez, Dave, I don't think I'm going to make it here. And, you know, like, well, if you made up your mind, I'll come straight over right now and I'm going to help you write the suicide note.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you're going to go, at least make it entertaining for the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know, first page, read something like, it was nobody's fault. And the second page, just go, here's all my passwords, so you know you can get into my accounts and take care of my affairs after I'm gone. And then change all the passwords to, I blame Julie, or the dog told me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just to make him go, is that really, you know? Because I think there's a point where somebody said, there's some topics in comedy that are taboo, and I'm like, look, if you can make fun of it, you know, good on with you. I mean, I've gotten in my fair share of trouble, and I used to really push it years ago. But the problem with that is, you get the respect of your peers, and then nobody hires you.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, he's really edgy. Where's he work?
He's really edgy. Nowhere. Really. So, yeah, he's really out there. So,
out there. He's not in here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's always fun to take it out the edge and bring it back if you can. I mean, like, what's it happened a little while back at a gal at the Comedy Store in London? Yeah, it's like, I'm an American. Any Americans? He goes, woo, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, where are you from? She's like, I'm from Boston. I'm like, oh, I fucking hate Boston. And I said, what are you doing here? She's like, I live here. And I go, do you like London? And she goes like this, right? She goes, I love London, right? And me, because I'm a comic and I have no filter, I went, yeah, London's great. I mean, you know, at least the marathons are safer.
Fucking hell.
And,
yeah. Is that a short gig?
And the crowd booed me.
Yeah.
And I went, too soon. And I looked at her and she was crying.
Oh, no.
And I said, are you all right? And she went, that was the worst day of my life. And then this little voice in my head went, fuck, it doubled down.
Fuck.
So I went, wow, were you friends with one of the bombers?
Oh.
And the great thing about British crowds is they went, ooh, but they were laughing when they did it. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean,
it's a risk.
Yeah, there's that. There's that without a doubt, you know. So I still haven't been on stage in so long, is you would follow an act like an MC or whatever, and they'd bring you up, and let's say that MC was gay or black or minority, and they'd have 20 minutes about being Asian or 20 minutes about being a lesbian. And it's all funny. It's all great. Don't get me wrong. And I used to like go up and go, and I go, well, Dave Fulton. I go, thank you, gay girl, you know?
Yeah.
And people like, woo. And I'm like, what? You didn't know? You know, I mean, it's kind of like, I just had 20 minutes of really funny gay stuff. And I just said, thank you, gay girl. So it's kind of like, oh, you're gay. Oh, you can't say that. Only I can say that. And you're like, well, you know.
Yeah.
So
the intent, isn't it? It's the intent.
But my intent is just to get out of there alive. <You know? laughs> I mean, as an American living over here in Europe and the UK, I mean, we are constantly the butt of jokes and it gets so boring.
Yeah.
You know, an American's fat and stupid. And here's an American, Dave Fulton. Oh my God, he's not fat. And he looks like he's read a book or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm bored of that, you know? Yeah. So we have to get right back to where we belong, making fun of gingers. So
it still blows my mind that still happens. I'm like, really? Are we still there? All right. But going back to what you were saying about suicide, and I was surprised when we talked. We've talked about that the other week when we had a chat, and it's more people have had there's a stigma. More people have had suicidal thoughts than haven't. I think there's a stigma attached to it. It's like that kind of you're obviously mad if you've had suicidal thoughts. It's like sometimes we just like, oh, fuck this, man. I'm going to go. Fuck this. This is bullshit. But you never do it, but you think it. And I think people need to realise that, you don't. This comes up a lot, actually, on here. You don't really want to do it, but you want the pain to stop, which is why you're thinking, fuck, if I just go, then this won't hurt anymore.
And you're bringing out in people, Rich. You bring it out. Bring out the suicide thought. I think it's really healthy to express that. But it's also you have to temper that on who you express that to. And there's the helplines you can call up and go and forget about doing it in. You know, and you get some voice the other end going, come on, don't, or, whatever, or I tried it, or something like that. But I think if you just got past the idea that everybody, a majority of people think about, cashing it in. And, because you think, what's the use? Thing is I've come close to death a couple times, climbing, and it's pretty amazing.
Really?
I mean, both times were unintentional. Obviously, the first time was in 1992. I was trying to climb Mount McKinley in Alaska. And the deal is just you acclimate to the altitude. You carry your loads high and then you sleep low. Carry high, sleep low. So, and you've got your rucksack on, you've got your skis on. And you've got a sled that you're pulling. The sled usually is about 80 pounds worth of weight and of climbing gear and all kinds of paraphernalia. So my partner and I, we were going up something called the West Rib or whatever, West Buttress. And we're going up the Kahiltna Glacier. And so we carried up to the top of this thing called Motorcycle Hill. And then across and dumped a whole bunch of gear, like ropes and gear and just tons of shit. So all we had was ski poles, crampons, and an empty rucksack. And we're coming down this ridge. And it's beautiful, by the way. Big storm's coming in. A big storm. And so we're kind of crisscrossing down this ridge because it's pretty steep. And if you go straight down, it busts your knees up. So you go back and forth. And so he was ahead of me. I don't know why, because usually I was ahead of him. And so I was walking back and forth, and the wind's blowing like crazy, and you can see where the ice is. And the snow always collects in the low spots. So you see the little pockets of snow and stuff. And so I step over this, and I stepped on this one section of snow that I shouldn't have. It was, a snow bridge covering a crevasse. I stepped in, and I immediately dropped. And I knew right away what it was. I knew that it was a slot. Now, slots are a horrible death, because if it's a pretty wide crevasse, you just drop down and crash and die at the bottom of it. And if it's a really narrow one, you just get wedged in and get you up. But if you slot, you'll drop down partway, get wedged in some weird angle, and you can't get out. Wow. And I knew there was a case of this guy named Chris. I can't remember his last name, which is sad. But he was climbing with another guy named Wickwire, and he was up in Alaska. He got caught in a slot upside down and eventually died. And his partner couldn't get him out because he broke his shoulder or something. And it was horrible. And so when I dropped, I yelled my partner's name and just was gone. And I just, my arms came down and I went down in. And then at that moment, which seemed like a long time, at that moment, my mind went, you're dead.
Jesus.
This is it. And I had a lot of things happening at my life at that moment. I had some personal issues. I had some career issues. So, I was doing comedy, I had some hypochondria probably, financial issues, because I'm going to be up in Alaska for 3.5 weeks, not making any money. And And I was just, you know, girlfriend issues. I mean, everything. And and at that moment, none of that mattered. None of it. All that stuff I thought was so important.
Yeah.
Was just like, not even, I mean, not even a blink of eye. It was just like it never existed.
Wow.
And the only thing that sat in my mind was, my parents are going to be really upset that, you know, they'll never get the body back. But I was fine with everything else. I mean, literally fine with, like, I'm dead. This is going to bum my parents out.
And that's how your brain went. That's what you remember.
And in like a flash, that's exactly what happened. And then suddenly everything just stopped. And my back was against the wall of the glacier, and my right foot had the crampon with the crampon caught on the other wall. And I was like just stuck there. And I like, oh my God. And I looked up. It was about 20, 30 feet above me. And so I put my other foot on so I could hold my...
Yeah. Fuck.
So it's narrow enough for me to get my wall and bend my legs against. And I'm like, wow. And I remember looking to my left, and about, you know, 5-6 feet over, it was pretty choked with snow. And then looking to my right, and about 5-6 feet over, it was so wide, there was no way I'd be able to, you know...
Mm.
It'd be able to bridge it. So, and then my partner poked his head through the hole, and he went, "Holy shit, are you okay?" And I went, "I don't know." He goes, "You bleeding? Are you any? Have you broken anything?" He's pretty experienced in the mountains,
yeah.
And I went, "No, I think I'm good." And we had no rope, we had no gear, nothing, because we left it all up above. And I'll never forget what he says. He looked at me and he goes, "So, what do you want to do, round eye?" And I said, "I want to get out of here." And I said, "Is there anybody up there?" And he's like, "No, nobody's up here, man. Everybody's hunkering down for the storm." So I chimneyed out, you know, so I'm, you know, putting your feet against and moving up and then
keep moving. Hell.
So I chimneyed the 30 feet up.
How long did that take you?
It probably took me about 10 minutes.
Yeah, because I was making it still exhausting.
Well, and I had to make really fucking sure that all my placements on my feet and everything, because below me, it just went dark. There was no bottom.
So was there light where you were? Was it light enough to see what you were
doing?
Yeah,
it was light enough to see, because it went white and then opaque and then light blue, dark blue, and then black.
Mm.
And we found out later that particular crevasse is a quarter mile deep. So 1,325 feet. Uh-huh. So I get up to the edge of it, and he braces himself and puts his arm in, and I grabbed his arm and kicked up and rolled out the glacier. And I remember I took a picture of the hole, and the hole looks like it's about this big that I just popped through. And so I popped the tendon out on my shoulder here, and we went down to our tent, and there was a somebody had built an igloo next to our tent, which is why we set up the tent next to there. And so I couldn't lift my arm very far up, you know. And so we hunkered down. We had like 60 mile an hour winds. It dropped to 40 below for 3 days. And 5 feet of snow, you know, built up. He kept getting up and digging out the tent and stuff. And it was funny because I was reading Peter Matheson's At Play in the Fields of the Lord.
Right.
Which is a story that takes place in the heat of a tropical jungle. And I'm like...
Just putting the book to yourself.
Yeah, yeah, ooh. Yeah. Yeah. The sweat was pouring off of the... Oh, my God. I wish I was there. Yeah, so because of my shoulder, we decided not to do the route we were going to do. But we had to go back up and get the tools, which we did. And, and then skied out and with a bad shoulder. And eventually... And there was a lot of... There was 13 deaths that year.
Fuck,
up on McKinley, but not me. But
how did you feel afterwards? Your outlook on life, did it, like, there's always that thing, it changed.
You start realizing that maybe getting to the top of the mountain was not the most important thing. I was pretty bummed because I've been training hard for this thing. I was bummed not to do it because he said, well, we won't do the Czech direct, you know, route, you know, maybe what we'll do is just the West Rib or West Butt. And he didn't want to do the West Buttress again because he'd done it before. And he was not in that great a shape. Not that was my deciding factor, but I just thought, let's get out of here. Mm. So we can come back. It's just a mountain. It's not going anywhere. We can always come back. We never did. But so, you know, came home and it was pretty wild because I was in monster shape before I went up, and I lost 9 or 11 pounds when I was up there. So I came back. I look good. Yeah. 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 I had a.
You've had 11 pounds of shit when you fucking went down the hole.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a six pack belly. I was walking around. I'll never forget. It was end of April in Idaho. It was still kind of chilly for 10 days. So, you know, and 40 below. So, you know, 70 degrees felt like a tropic to me. And I was walking around with no shirt on. And the girls checked me out going, look at him, man. Look at the six pack, you know. So I haven't had a six pack since, by the way. But
I've never had a six pack.
Yeah. Well, you know, not on your body.
Not in the right place anyway.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then a few years ago, I guess it's about probably 8 years ago, I was in Chamonix on the Grand Montagne, and I was doing some ice climbing with some guys, and we were checking out some stuff at the top of the Grand Montagne, and long story short, we triggered an avalanche.
Oh,
and,
shit.
I got caught in an avalanche. It hit me. It crowned above me. It was about 4 foot crown, and it hit me like a truck and knocked me off my feet. And it was pretty weird because I'm moving.
Yeah.
And but I'm inside the snow. You know. I mean, I looked up.
Are you the right way up, and you haven't been like knocked?
Yeah,
over,
I was right way up, and I got my feet in front of me, and I remember my mouth was crammed full of snow, and I couldn't breathe, and I had to chew the snow up and spit it out. While I was moving, and I was moving, and I realized, okay, I'm moving head. I think I'm moving, you know, face first. And I had a transceiver in my rucksack, and I thought, okay, when this stops and I get locked in, hopefully I can reach back there and turn that thing on. And just then I was falling inside the snow, and I knew there was like a 2000 foot drop off, you know, further
Shit,
down. And
man.
I thought, this is it. And then it stopped, and I went, oh, okay. And I thought, hope that doesn't happen again. And then it did. I fell again. And at the second one, it was longer. And I went, oh, I'm dead. And I remember I got tossed around, and I was looking up. And then I turned around, and I was actually half buried in the snow. And I was like, my torso was out of the snow, and I was still moving. So it was pretty weird to be looking at the snow around you, and it's still. And you look off to your left, and you see the scenery going by.
Shit, you know, like, man.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, I hope this slows down. And then I looked ahead, and I could see I was still a little ways, you know, a couple hundred yards away from the big drop. And then it stopped. And so I stood up, got the snow off, and my partner, I'm yelling, I go, Matt, I'm looking around. I thought, oh my God, he must be buried around me, because he was off to my left.
Yeah.
And I hear this, Dave, and I look up, and he was on top of this massive 30-foot high boulder that I fell off of. The snow rolled me off. And he goes, are you all right? I'm like, I lost my tool, man. I had one tool, and they're like $300 a piece. So I'm like, where the fuck is it? Right? So I'm looking around for it. And he goes, yeah, I lost both mine too. So I come up to where he is. I said, well, we got to find him. And he went, yeah. And then I went, or we can just get off this. He went, yeah. So we walked off, and my buddy Dane was running down from the top of the lift, because he saw the whole thing, and he said, I saw it hit you. I thought, he's dead. Yeah. You're both dead. And he goes, I don't know how you survived. I don't know why you're still alive. And so my buddy Matt, he caught a cramp on his leg and cut it open, and I dislocated my thumb was all bent back, but it went back, but it's still really, you know, messed up. And then we see the French ski patrol guy come up, and we thought, uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Oh, yeah, because you triggered it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were off piece, and we knew we were off piece, and you could be off piece, but, you know, fuck it. So he comes up, and he's wearing a red one piece, right? And he's got glasses on, and he's tan, and he's got a little action belt, and he goes, and I go, hey, bonjour, you know, and Matt's trying to speak French to him because he's Canadian, but he's an idiot, you know. It was funny. He's like, we all do it with you, boo. And I'm like, yeah. And the guy goes, are you injured? And I'm like, no, I'm all right. And he's like, yeah, all right. And he goes, is anybody else in the center? We're like, no, it's just us. And he went, you are lucky. And then he fucked off.
Wow, man.
And,
fuck.
And we were lucky.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, nothing like getting caught in an avalanche and make you kind of do a little inventory, you know?
Fucking hell, man.
So we had fondue and beers that night.
Yeah, I bet you did. Jesus Christ, man. Now, I knew this was going to be a good chat. I didn't know how good. Fuck, man, that is awesome. So, and I'm glad you're still here. I'm glad you're still here.
Thanks, man.
To share these stories. Yeah, man.
Climbing is, you don't have to think about anything else. I mean, you you know when you're on stage and you're just in the moment, you have those rare occurrences that you can never capture, you know, where you can just, you can't capture it on TV or film or whatever, where you're just, you know, the audience, you're in sync and it's moving and you're kind of come up with new stuff and you come back, you come off stage and you go, you know, and climbing's like that. Climbing is, you're so in the moment, and when everything's just working, it's just brilliant. And when I snowboard, same thing. You snowboard, you get down a steep slope and it's got new snow on it and you're just cutting turns and you just want it to go on forever and you think you're going to live forever, man. So, and that's the thing about comedy. I mean, I think all my favorite comedians never got into it with career goals. They never had a 5-year plan. They just did it, you know, and after a while they just kept doing it and they were good at it. And they were very lucky and given chances to do things that brought, great financial gains. Yeah. But I'm always suspicious of anybody who goes, well, I'm going to have this and this, I'm going to want that. And if I'm not on hosting a talk show or a panel show after 10 years or my own Netflix special, then what the hell am I doing this for? I'm like, I have nothing in common with you. Nothing.
Yeah, I was just happy to be doing it. And then anything else was a bonus.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, I love when people are going, what are you going to do now? And you go, well, I like doing this. I'm doing all the clubs. I'm having a nice time. Yeah, but you got what about next level? And you're like, ah, shit, all right. And you get caught up in it.
Well, it was time. I go, this is the next level.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we'll keep doing it. I like doing it, and I'm gonna keep doing it, and I can't wait to get out there and do it.
Yeah. Somebody asked me, is there anything you're going to change when you get back out there? And you go, I don't know, probably. I mean, even before this happened, every time I got out there, I tried to change shit up. I remember I would get to the point where I'm like, man, I'm tired of saying this shit. And I would come up with new stuff. And people go, oh, my God, you wrote a whole bunch of new stuff. And I'm like, really? Did I? All right. I was just bored. Because after a while, as you know, you're working. And you start hearing this irritating noise in your head and you realize, oh, fuck, that's my voice.
Yeah.
I gotta write a joke.
Oh, man. This has been amazing, Dave. Thank you so much, mate.
Thanks, Rick.
I knew you'd be fucking great. This has been awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Insane in the membrane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.